Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, July 31st. I'm Ray Graff. Coin and stamp experts back for another hour of rollicking fun, talking about stamps and coins and whatnot. Bob Scott and David Tripp are here. If you are enthusiastic about coins and or stamps, give us a call. 800-348-2551. Even if you're blasé about it, give us a call. We got an hour to fill. 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org if you have a coin or stamp question. But the number is 800-348-2551. Love having David and Bob on the program, and they're back. We will be back to take your calls after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. This is it. This is your Super Bowl. If you're a collector of stamps or coins, this is the Stamp and Coin Show. We welcome Bob Scott. He was a curator to a private collection, senior technical specialist at Christie's, head of the stamp departments at both Sotheby's and Bonhams. He's currently a private consultant whose clients include Sotheby's, for whom he cataloged the world's most valuable stamp. Also with us is David Tripp, former director of Sotheby's Coin, Tapestry, and Musical Instrument Departments. He's author of Illegal Tender, Gold, Greed, and the Mystery of the Lost, 1933 Double Eagle, and he's also a fine art consultant and a cartoonist to boot. If you have a question, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. 2551, or you can email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. Bob Scott, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing exceedingly well, Ray. How are you?
Really? Good exceedingly summer? Well?
Exceedingly.
Wow, he's British.
That's amazing. David Tripp, how are you? I can't imagine you're that doing that well.
I am not exceedingly well.
No?
Well, you know, we have in coins, we have grades. I'm sort of 70, you know, good, very fine.
79.
Yeah, thank you. Let's not point age at it.
Hey now. So it's the Olympics. Everybody's excited. And you have some news about the first gold medal from 1896.
Well, the first gold medals from 1896 were, in fact,
silver. Well,
the
same thing. Why were they silver?
The way they made them. It was all new and exciting. And actually, you got a laurel wreath to go with it.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
No silvers and no bronze.
And what was the laurel wreath made out of? Was it
It was a real laurel wreath.
Oh, it wasn't
it
fine
was, No, it was
metal
the real deal. Because everybody that went to the first 1896 Olympics paid their own way. They were genuine amateurs. They figured it out. And that was the first American gold medalist. Was an American from Baltimore who actually had a numismatic connection. He owned, with his brother, the greatest collection of coins, one of the greatest collections ever formed in the United States, which they eventually gave to Johns Hopkins University.
Oh.
But Robert Garrett was his name, and very wealthy family. I think his family started the B&O Railroad.
Ah.
So,
from the Monopoly game.
Exactly. You didn't want Reading and you didn't want Pennsylvania. You wanted the B&O.
Exactly.
So he was at Princeton, and his professor suggested that, you know, it might be a good thing to do with this new thing called the Olympic Games. This new old thing. And so he decided to compete. And he decided one of the things he really wanted to compete in is the most classic then Olympic event, the discus.
Yeah.
Right.
You mean not breakdancing or skateboarding? What's going on?
Thank you. We will not.
The old guy's complaining.
Anyway, so he had never seen a discus apart from looking at sculpture and things like that. So he had a blacksmith make him one to practice with. It weighed 30 pounds.
Oh, that's a good practice.
Well, he didn't know it. So he got to Athens. And the real one weighed 5 pounds. So for him, it was kind of like throwing a frisbee.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And he won.
So he won. And of course, there were three competitors from Greece. And of course, it was their national event. So it was a big slap in the face.
Oh, boy. That's terrible.
So he won the discus.
Yeah.
So that was America's first gold medal. He won the shot put.
Did he have a 30-pound shot put to practice with?
He also came in second in the high jump and long jump.
You're kidding me.
And then he came back to the Olympics in 1900, came in third in the shot put. And here's an event that they don't do anymore. Think about it. The standing triple jump. So you don't run. You just hop, step, and jump from a standing position.
I did not know that.
And he was also on the he was on the Olympic tug of war team, but they couldn't get enough other men, really? So it was canceled. So he is the first major medalist. He won 6 Olympic medals all told. So he's pre Michael Phelps and Simone
Phelps
and Phelps and Mark Spitz and all those guys.
Right. But of course, as you note here on the notes that you provide, the first Olympic coins go way back, though, right?
Yes, they go back to the 5th century BC.
Yeah.
And they are beautiful works of art. And actually, in the 5th century BC, they were striking coins to honor the 100th Olympiad.
Wow. That's cool.
So the first Olympiad was, I think, 776 or 778 BC.
And they went into up to the 300s.
Yeah, yeah. Fabulous works of art. However, there were, at that time, there were no commemorative Olympic stamps.
No, but it's when the Olympic Games was reconstituted by Pierre de Coubertin in 1896, the Greek government actually issued stamps to help pay for it. And they liked it so much that they issued more in 1906, even though they weren't going to have the Olympics again don't know how many years.
So are those 1896 stamps worth some money?
Yes, they're actually quite a good set. And that was probably the last time a good set was issued.
Oh, you're already in one of those dark moods.
It's Bob Scott, the voice of doom.
Start me on the Russian. Well, nobody's coming. We better sell some stamps. 1980, the Los Angeles Olympics. Let's try and rebuild the Coliseum just from stamp sales. And probably, I think my favorite, the 1976 Montreal. Please, somebody help us pay for this Olympic Games, which I think they're still paying for.
Oh, that stadium, that huge stadium.
1976. I mean, I saw
some Mets games up there after the Olympics. Yeah. What a cavernous, giant place that was.
I mean, it was absolutely awesome, but it leaves a big hole after it's gone.
Yeah.
It really does. But anyhow, we're in an Olympic mood.
I think I need a drink now. Everyone's really depressed.
Where is it? Are you sharing?
We're on the air. We can't do that. Bob Scott and David Tripp are here at Stamps and Coins, 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. If you have a question, you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And believe it or not, despite the less than scintillating quality of the beginning of this program,
we have some
people write notes. Not your fault, obviously, the host's fault. Julie writes in, when I was a teenager, I collected foreign coins. I missed the fun I had getting a hold of coins from all the strange places. Occasionally, I'd get coins that were centuries old. I was just curious how active the trading of foreign countries is today and what kind of coins collectors are looking for these days. And that's from Julie.
Well, the foreign coin market is extremely active. American coin market has, I think, as we've discussed more than once, was really red hot.
Yeah.
Prices were going stupid amounts of money, quite honestly. And what generally happens, and it's historic, and it is one of the market cycles, when a U.S. coins kind of price out and they're just too expensive for the average guy to buy, people start looking around, collectors start looking around for the next tier, something interesting, and foreign coins fill the blank. And so it's become more and more popular, more and more interesting. It depends on what you're interested in, of course. Britain has been extremely active recently. France is still kind of in the doldrums. German coins are okay. Russian is way down. If you pick up a newspaper and see what economies are like, very frequently you're going to get an idea of how the economy. It's like when Russia opened up to the world, Russian coins were incredibly hot. That's Same thing, China. Chinese coins right now are just you know, getting ridiculous prices.
So China opened up to the world? Is that what you're saying?
Well, let's put it this way.
Show.
They're willing to spend money.
Okay.
And there are people willing to sell them things. So,
okay,
yes, from
right.
that point of view, they are well open to the world.
Fair enough.
Of all things, there's a collection. If you have a lot of money, there is a Danish collection of coins that was formed in the 1924 that the family is finally selling. It is purportedly worth $70 million.
Wow.
Being sold in Copenhagen.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I have no idea. It's apparently fabulous stuff, and we'll see if the Danish market is there. But the markets have become so international. The internet and everything has just branched out. So to your inquiry, I would say buy what you're interested in. If the history of a certain country is what you like,
yeah,
try and go for it.
All right, the number to call here is 800-348-2551. Stamps and coins are on the table today. You can email us as well at voxpop@wamc.org, and we'll do one more email, and then we'll take a little break, and then we'll come back. My phone is not exactly working at the moment, so I can't see the email. All right, let's just take a break. 800-348-2551. I'll figure it out. Zach, the engineer, will play some music, and we'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. It's Stamps and Coins today. David Tripp handles the coins, and Bob Scott handles the stamp questions. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Looks like in the notes that you guys prepare for me, there was a stamp hit the market at about 800,000. And the collection, Bob, you were a private curator for, owned it once. So tell me about that one.
Oh, yes.
The penny pink or whatever it is?
No, it's the first stamp in the world was the penny black, which was a picture of Queen Victoria, and it's thought of as being quite rare, but they printed about 40 million of them.
Oh, boy.
And they were only around for a year. They then followed it up with 24 years of what's known as the penny red. So the numbers are actually in the billions.
Oh.
But they printed them, and they actually incorporated into the design the actual number of the plate. And one of these plates was, like David's very famous coin, was scheduled to be thrown out and not used.
Oh.
And about six of these stamps, they have a little 77, they're known as a plate 77, are known to exist. There's one in the Royal Collection, there's in a couple of other institutions, there's only a few out in the wild, and the best of which is now being offered for sale, £650,000, $800,000, and it's just a single one of a billion stamps on a piece of paper with another piece.
It's the first.
And it's just one of it's the best looking used example of the less than of the two that are possible to
own. And it's not very pretty.
It's the reason why it was made obsolete was the fact that it was just a badly printed stamp. But and its law has just followed because kings and princes have sought after this stamp. And the interesting thing is, you start the introduction, my introduction, every time we do the show, saying I was a curator for a private collection.
Yeah.
Well, my boss, when I was 24 years old, disappeared to America because this particular stamp came up, and he bought it in America for $80,000.
Mm-hmm.
He flew back to England on my 25th birthday, and that's when I first saw it.
Wow.
So here we are nearly 40 years later, and it's come back. So
this was plate 77, right?
This is plate 77.
Was there a plate 76?
There's a plate 76.
But this is
pennies, plate 78, pennies, plate 79, pennies. There's a slightly rare one which is worth a few dollars, which is plate 225.
And you're taking notes?
The reason that plate 77 was worth more is just because they were in great shape?
Because it was in lousy shape. They threw it away. They said, don't issue any.
Oh, and it was badly made. Yeah.
I see.
It's the 1943 penny of the stamp world.
That is very interesting.
They are so common. But it's quite recently as well, we've had the world's most expensive single American stamp come up for sale. It sold for $4.5 million.
That's the inverted Jenny?
No. It's a 1 cent Franklin stamp from 1867, and it is identical in every single way to one of the most common stamps of that same year. And I'm reasonably private. I've only had to deal with 3 or 4 inquiries with people. I saw that stamp sold for $4.5 million. I've got one. To which I, of course, reply, no, you don't.
Well,
that's Bob. That's Bob has a little whine. You just pull the string on Bob's back.
No, you don't. No, you don't.
All right, let's go to the phones and see what happens. 800-348-2551 is the number. Justin is in West Stockbridge. Justin, go ahead.
Hey, so my father-in-law passed away last week, and as of today, we started going through the attic to kind of sort through his items, and we found a very small but limited stamp collection, and there was one that stood out to me. I have it with me. It says Nyasaland Protectorate, 10 pounds.
Yes,
and it has the profile of a man. It's mostly blue. It's on white. But I'd never heard of Nyasaland before, and I figured I would call in since that's the topic of the day. And
sure.
I'm wondering if you happen to know anything.
It is an African country. It is part of the British Commonwealth. The man once, you have got.
It is still part of the Commonwealth.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I mean, at the time the stamp was issued, it was probably part of the empire.
Yeah.
Because it was pre-Commonwealth. The man is going to be either George the Sixth or George the Fifth, which makes a difference. Is it used or is it unused?
It looks like it's unused. There's no stamp on it.
Okay. There's no stamp on it. And does it have gum on the back?
Does it have gum on the back? Yes.
Yes,
okay.
It does.
Yeah.
It really depends. Yep. It really depends on the king, which I can't do. But all you need to do is look up, get the. You've got an internet, a phone, or
well,
an
does he
internet
have a beard
connection
or not? Wouldn't that be the difference between?
Well, you've also
and
got George Edward VII. George.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Does he have a beard? That's probably quite good because that'll limit it.
He does. Yeah, he does have a beard. So
it's almost certainly going to be George the Fifth. You could just look it up. You will see, and you will see Nyasaland, £1. In fact, I could probably do it now.
Oh, okay.
Does it have any more of the rest of the set?
I found this about an hour ago, and it just so happened that you're doing a radio show on.
Isn't that amazing?
I have it with me. I'm driving back to North Adams, and I figured I'd pull over and call.
Oh, what a good idea. No, I mean,
he said 10 pounds, yeah?
£1.
£1.
Okay.
Yeah, he's looking it up, Justin.
10 pounds.
10 pounds.
£10.
Oh, sorry, it's a 10 pound. Of course it is. It's the high value.
Yeah, right. Okay. While we're at it.
£10, and then the guy has a beard. It's a profile. The profile is kind of a reddish color. The surrounding border is blue.
I know the stamp. Reddish, £10.
Uh-huh.
And as long as it's unused, so it's a blue border with a purple head?
Correct. Yep.
Right. So it's 1919. It's a Scott 24. Unused. I mean, it could be, if it's in really nice condition, could be as good as $250,
$300.
Nice.
Go to Bob.
So you could actually have a hit. I'm not telling you to go and burn it.
Justin, I just want to give you a little backstory here. These guys are on three or four times a year, and that's the only time I've ever heard Bob actually give some really good news to someone. So this is like a red letter day. Unfortunately, it took someone dying, but I mean,
well, and of course,
so question then: how would one go about optimizing the dollar amount that they get back for a stamp? Would you go to a local dealer? Would you want to do it online? How how would you optimize the return?
It's good enough, and it's also it needs to be examined, because if it's on the right paper, I mean, you might be looking at a few thousand dollars.
Yeah, buddy.
It would,
wow.
First of all, look after it, make sure it doesn't get damp, make sure it doesn't get stuck to anything.
Sure.
Would an image help?
Yeah, you could send me an image, and I will point you in the right direction.
Okay.
I don't really. I like British Empire, but I don't. I don't really deal with it or handle it too much. But I can point you in the right direction.
Shall I give the?
Why don't you give the email address right now,
okay,
and then we'll dispatch
it later.
Justin.
It's really easy. It's coinandstampguys@BERK.com.
Did you get that, Justin?
Easy. Yep, got it. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for making our monumental day.
How about that?
This is
some optimism.
This is
Bob.
You've got to go on vacation more often.
The
you bring back good stuff.
All right, here, let's go to Millbrook. And Mary, you're on. Hello, Mary.
Hi. Yes, Mary Morse. I'm calling from Millbrook, New York.
Okay.
Hi.
I'm sort of intimidated by the knowledge of Bob and David.
Me too.
I have sort of a menial question after this stamp business. My husband has just recently died.
I'm sorry.
And cleaning things out again. I knew he was collecting coins from the time he was a kid, and we've been married for 60 years, and he's continued to collect silver and nickels and rolls of coins, and he's packaged them, and there's some loose. Well, anyway, I've got some heavy boxes and things of coins, and
we lost you, Mary. Are you still there?
Yeah. But anyway, I got sort of overwhelmed with all this stuff, and I want to take it somewhere, but I want to take it to somewhere. Are you guys still there?
We are here. We are listening. Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry. As I said, I want to take it to a reputable place, and you guys sound really knowledgeable, but I don't mind driving somewhere. How do I find
Well, it
out?
Sounds like you have a very large accumulation from the sound of some very, very heavy boxes. And you're in Millbrook, so not too far from Manhattan, really.
Yep.
I mean,
I don't want to go to Manhattan.
You don't want to go to Manhattan. Okay. Duchess
well,
can...
I don't... Well, it, you know...
I tell
I know
you what.
I've got
I tell you, Mary, here's an idea.
I'm sorry. They're kind of heavy to carry.
Yeah,
no, I
even on the train.
Yep. No. I. What you might do is if you can sort of either make a list. If he collected seriously, some of the coins might be in folders of coins. What we used to call blue.
Yes, they are. Some of them are in like blue envelopes.
Blue. The Whitman folders.
And,
yes. So if you can.
And some are just rolls and marked with dates.
If you could make up just an easy list for you of just some of the things that it says on the outside, and send it to the coin and stamp guys, I can at least give you a better handle on what you might be able to do with them. And the easiest way and the most there are people that would even come to visit you. But we need to have an idea of what sort of stuff there is to get
people
you.
People might come if there's some good stuff to be
exactly.
Packed. But
exactly.
I mean, Mary,
I don't mind driving north up the Taconic, up towards Albany or up that direction. But
right.
Going down Westchester Way is.
I understand.
But I think if you start with a little bit of a list to us, I can give you much better direction.
And there's a book that they call the Red Book.
It's the Red Book. It's called the Guidebook of United States Coins.
And it's not that expensive, Mary. I have one at home for anything that we might find. And if your late husband had put those in the books and written on the rolls, what he had and the dates, you'll really be able to tell.
This will give you a great guide
in advance.
And in fact, you don't even have to buy a copy. You can go to the library. Every library has a copy.
Mary, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. That's the telephone number. Bob, Scott, and David Tripp are here. It's stamps today and coins today. And Michael's in Williamstown. Michael, go ahead.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Michael.
Hey, Michael.
So I'm just going to cut right to the chase. I'll save you the long stories. So I have the 2 cent George Washington stamps. It's an older George Washington, and they're orange, and they're hand dated. 1865 PC was the mark that they put on them for the, when it goes to the post office. And then I have some other 2 cent George Washington stamps that's a young George Washington with a ponytail. One of them is kind of a red, one is kind of like a maroon, and then one is a light red. And underneath the three of those different ones, underneath the circular part that's around him, there's different wording under a couple of them. And I was just curious if you could tell me because I've gone online and everybody says, very rare, extremely rare.
Okay.
It's hard to believe what you read online,
Yep. Really?
The strangest thing, not the strangest, but one of the facets of American philately is, guess who is the person who has appeared more on U.S. stamps than any other?
Franklin.
George Washington.
Oh, okay, fine.
It's
Washington.
I thought he was the postmaster.
Coming in number two is Franklin. There's, as David said, there's a very, very easy way to do your basic research on this. And it's almost, I can do an individual stamp for you now, but if you have various, we're not going to get anywhere because we'll spend the whole of the rest of the show and we might identify 5 very common stamps. You can do it online by just looking up 2 cent. Tell me the wording under the first stamp you were looking at.
I don't have them with me. I'm actually at work.
Okay.
I had noticed that, the wording was different.
Right, they are. Sometimes you have 1 cent, a figure one, and then a cent. Sometimes you have a motto. Sometimes you have Washington's name. Sometimes there are various types. If you really want to know, you can just one by one them by looking up 2 cent stamps on the internet and just going to the images and identifying from there. That will give you a basic idea, but then you will have different, but you will be able to point out the absolutely not worth anything or worth 2 cents and the slightly better. But the single best thing to give a really good idea if you just want a single source, just go into your nearest public library, get a Scott catalog, and at the front of the Scott catalog, they have something called an identifier, and they identify every single stamp that's ever been issued.
Okay.
It's in a book like this, and the section. And
is there an app for
section.
That?
You can get an online version, but you kind of have to buy it.
Yeah.
But the public library has a basic collection, just like David's coin book.
Yeah.
Just like the Red Book, there is the Scott Specialized Catalog of United States Stamps, and it lists, and basically you can go through it and go, Washington, okay, 2 cent, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it will show you a picture of it and the different facets. So that's what you should do.
Michael, thank you for the call. It's Stamps and Coins today with Bob Scott and David Tripp. No, I meant, and I think I've asked you guys about this on previous shows. We have bird aficionados who can hold up their phone and take a picture or listen to the sound of a bird and it'll query a database.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there something like that where you can just hold your phone up, take a picture of the stamp, and then it'll say, oh, yeah, that's a 1931 George Washington 3 cent stamp.
I have not seen it yet, but I don't imagine. I imagine that within 5 years there will be one.
There are, and there for coins, there have been attempts at it, and especially with AI starting to rock and roll. But from some of the things that I've seen, it's the hit and miss rate is so miss
yeah.
that it's unbelievable. In some cases, somebody's taken a picture of an American coin and it's the answers come back that it was Roman by Julius Caesar or something like that. So I think they have a ways to go.
All right, well, maybe it was a lousy picture. Maybe it was a cheap phone, you know?
Other thing is, I mean, for Britain and America that uses, George Washington was a great example. They use a lot of metal heads and coinage heads. You could take a picture of a stamp and they will correctly identify it as a coin.
And of course, with yours, if the color of the reproduction isn't absolutely perfect.
Oh, yes. The color can make the difference in the world.
Yeah,
interesting. Yeah. All right, let's take another call here before we take a break. It's David Tripp at Bob Scott. Stamps and coins today, 800-348-2551. Larry's in Ulster County. Larry, go ahead. Larry's fallen asleep.
Hello, Larry.
Hello, Larry. Wake up, Larry. Hello.
Larry has gone away.
Well, Larry had an important question, and now he's gone. And Larry, you can call back if you're still alive. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. I'm sorry, Larry. It took a while. If you're on hold, just hang in there, everybody. We'll be back. Box Pop on WAMC. It's Stamps and Coins today with Bob Scott and David Tripp and you. And we'll grab an email or two, and then we'll get back to the phones. Dave's niece writes in. I have recently inherited coins from a family member who spent their life collecting them. I've been told that they're only worth their gold or silver weight and that they'll be melted down. That's horrifying to me. Some of them are so unique and fun to look at. I would sooner give them out as Halloween goodies than take money from a shop knowing that they would be melted down. How can this be?
The problem is, as we've discussed many times, a lot of these things have been made in vast quantities.
Yeah.
And particularly, even $20 gold pieces. I mean, St. Gaudens design and the Liberty Head design, these are 19th and 20th century, early 20th century coins of significant artistic value. The problem is the price of gold, as we've been watching, has accelerated at such a rate that what we call the premium, the difference between the numismatic value and the bullion value, has narrowed because the collector value just can't keep up that far ahead. And so plus the fact that there have been hordes of these things suddenly coming out of central bank around the world. Mm-hmm. And so the market is flooded with them.
Yeah.
And so, for example, when I started there was a time where in 1980, let's say, you could get $2,000 for a mint condition $20 gold piece. Gold was melting at anywhere, let's say in the early 70s or $350, and you could get 10 times the value if you sold it or 8 times the value.
Yeah.
Today, they melt at $2,300, and you can buy one for $2,400.
Oh, okay. I understand.
So the problem is, from a dealer's point of view, to hold the stock, to invest the money with interest rates so high, it's a lot easier to turn them into scrap and sell the gold and get ready cash.
But my thinking on this is, if you don't need the money, hang
on
to
them. And if you like that, that's what I was going to say next, that it sounds like he likes what he has, so enjoy it. Look at it.
Yeah. And,
as he said, he's going to give them away as gifts for Halloween. Yeah. Just give us his address.
Yeah, because I'll be trick-or-treating with a very, very sturdy bag, let me tell you.
One imagines a lot of this could be just sort of plated replicas and what have you, because, as I said, to give them away for Halloween, I mean, gold is worth serious money.
Well, even John D. Rockefeller only gave away dimes.
Right, exactly. But they were silver.
Well, that's true.
Maybe Dave's niece is really loaded, you know what I mean? So you never know. Here's a question from Kirby. I know it's not your area, but do you know anyone who'd be interested in very old postcards?
Bob. No.
It depends what very old is.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the first postcards are really a German idea that sort of first saw the light of day in the 1850s.
Yeah.
Right up to the point that you had a special rate for the postcard. It cost you 3 cents to send a letter. It only cost you 1 cent to send a postcard.
Yeah.
And the tradition then became of people, it was a cheaper way of doing it. So people went on vacations and they sent postcards. They also went on tours around the world and they sent postcards.
And postcard collecting is a really discreet area, a specialized area of collecting.
Right,
that,
it is.
That doesn't...
And when they first came out, the original were black and white photographs and very similar. And then a very, very complex increase took place where colorized postcards
came through.
And the interesting thing is you can see a view pictures of New York and Chicago and Philadelphia. And in the background, they'll have these wonderful blue cloudy skies. And then if you look at several of them together, you'll realize it's the same cloudy
same
sky
background.
In the background. And some of them are worth more than others. So it's a very, very specialized area. But really, for valuable ones...
It's a specialized area.
Location. You do have a couple. Certainly, there are postcards specially designed for travel on German airships, which are worth thousands of dollars. There are specific examples that were used rarely in China that are worth thousands of dollars. But you're really looking... If it's got anything to do with the birth of mechanics and, you know, motorcycles, planes, trains, automobiles through the 1920s and 30s, you've got something.
Yeah.
Or if they're view pictures, they've really got to be from the 1870s, 1880s, and that turn of the century where they started coming out with color. You can get better ones. Don't know that much about it, but there are guides, and it's a subject that has been written on.
Yeah.
And I think the antique dealers will tell you, depending if somebody famous wrote that postcard, then you have something.
And
right.
Without
but
question.
But then that's the autograph market. Yeah.
Yeah. A good signature will definitely get you.
Yeah.
Will definitely set you in the right way. But postcards, if you were going to say all the pictures up until 1920, it's probably one in 50,000 that is of any good.
They're fun things to have. I have a batch that somebody gave me. Photographs of the interior of the second or third U.S. Mint, where the 1933 Double Eagles, with guys counting the coins and the ladies with the machines. And some of them were sprinkled with gold dust, so they're very cool and worth maybe $5 or $6
a piece.
That's
very neat.
They're cool.
I believe we have Mark Lawson on. He does an antique show every so often on this program, and I think he's on next month. So if you're still listening with the postcards, you might want to give Mark a call. He might know a little more about it. Now, the elusive Larry in Ulster County is back. Larry, hello, you're on. Hi, Larry's spinning plates on the Ed Sullivan Show. All right, go ahead. Larry, you're killing me, man. Hello.
Hello.
All right, that's it. Larry, that's my... Listen, even I have my limits. That's the end of that.
Maybe Mo and Curly can get there next.
You chowder head. it's very good, David. Let's go to Ulster County again, and we'll go to Chris. Chris, you're on.
Why, you ought to... Sorry. I had to get him out of it. I have a small collection of first day covers, about 100 or so, and one sticks out as potentially interesting. It's an airmail first day cover from probably around the 1940s, based on the airplane that's depicted on the stamp.
Right.
But what I find unusual about it is it's not perforated. It is very straight. I looked very carefully. It does not look like it was cut out, and there's enough border around the image that I don't think anyone, you know, cut it with scissors.
What's the denomination and what's the color?
It's blue.
It's
and
10
I apologize.
Cents.
I'm at.
And it's 10 cents.
I think it's more than that. I think it's more than that.
Okay.
Okay.
But I apologize. I'm at work, so I don't know the actual number.
Give me half a second. I think I'll be able to tell you exactly what it is.
Really?
Really
just based on that
better.
Description?
Wonderful.
Okay. Fair enough.
Well, I think it's going to be 10 cents. It could be. Is it just a single plane in the middle?
Yes, and it's flying. It would be flying toward you if you were you know, if it was real life.
So it's head on, straight on.
Oh, it's flying straight on.
Yeah.
It is. Oh, I know exactly what it is. So it's a 25-cent.
All right,
China
clipper.
China what?
Okay,
it's a 25-cent China clipper.
Ah,
and
okay,
if it doesn't have perforations, well, first of all,
it doesn't. He said
we're assuming that. Well, it whether it did or it didn't, and somebody
these
tried.
These are the niceties.
Well, that's why I'm saying the border around it is wide enough that it would strike me as odd that the perforations would have been that far away. That's why I thought it was interesting.
Right, but you don't have it exactly. You don't have it with you.
No.
The thing is,
unfortunately, no.
There are similar stamps that came earlier that exist in booklet panes, and the booklet panes were not perforated. They come without perforations.
I think this calls for an image to coin and stamp guys at Burke.com.
I think it absolutely is, because if it is the 25-cent, it shouldn't exist without perforations, unless it is not a stamp at all, and in fact that it's just a cutout from postal stationery. And if it's cut out, the postal stationery doesn't have postal, because the stamp was imprinted on the envelope.
Wouldn't there be gum on the back?
In that case, there absolutely wouldn't be gum, because the stamp becomes part of the envelope.
It's a first-day cover.
Yes, but I'm pretty sure that it can't be.
Well, why don't we...
Yeah,
give,
well, okay, that's a good idea. Yeah. Send the email.
I'd be happy to send an image, because I'm definitely curious about it.
Yeah, it's coin and stamp guys all spelled out at Burke.com.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And that'll do
wonderful.
It.
I'll have it to you by tonight.
That's fabulous.
Thanks very much, Chris. Appreciate the call. Appreciate you being there when we went to you. That's very nice. So let's go to Springfield and Brooks. Hello, Brooks.
Hi.
Hi, Brooks.
Hello.
Hi, you're on.
I got you.
Okay. And?
Hello.
Yeah, please, feel free to elucidate.
Okay, my question is, are World War II ration stamps have any value?
World War II ration stamps.
They really fall out of the... area for stamp collectors per se, because they are stamps, and are they cancelled, or are they just the ration stamps in the book? They fall really into World War II. What country are they from?
United States.
So they were created but not used.
Correct.
Because there was no rationing. So I don't know. I've never come across them. They're not listed in the Scott catalog. I mean, there are war savings stamps, but the ration stamps, I mean, do they say anything on them?
Well, I don't have anything on me right now. I'm in a car. But they were in booklets. They were issued in booklets.
Yeah.
Some of them are for oil.
Yeah.
Some for like that.
And there were also rationing stamps that were issued for countries under occupation. And there were, we've got to see the specific ones.
World War II memorabilia more.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there's a limited, I mean, there's really not a great market for it, but I don't know. It was a time, but. Of course, the U.S. didn't ration, so there's no way for a market to be created. So nobody had them to start collecting in the first place. But, I mean, there would be interest to someone for memorabilia. We have to find out exactly what they are. So this is something where you could send us a picture, and I'll identify it for you.
Okay. Well, Brooks, thanks a lot. Let's go to Keith in Ankrum. Keith, you're on.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep.
Hi, Keith, yes.
Hi. When I was a kid in the 60s, my father would buy every commemorative stamp that came out. They're in sheets with a serial number, and I must have five or six of these albums. Mm. They're in very good shape. Mm. Some of them do stick to the backing. There's a lot. So I must have 150 of these commemorative stamps from the 60s.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bob, we want to give them the bad news.
Yeah, I mean, if you use them as postage,
really,
then you get your money back.
So there's really no collectible value at this time for those.
No, because they printed them in the tens of millions. Unfortunately, I'd love to say something far more practical about it, but it's really a case of everyone who wants one has got one.
What if he holds on to it and his family in 100 years?
Well, that's exactly the same case with David and his gold and his silver coins with his Les Mayver. Yeah. It's the one that outweighs the other that ends up. But at this point,
I'll call back in 100 years.
There you go.
You know what? We'll probably still be here.
Absolutely.
Actually, this show seems like it's been 100 years already.
Oh, exactly.
Keith, thank you, Ray. Thank you.
No, it's not.
Good man.
It's not
good
your
man.
Fault. Let's go to Kingston. Kathy, you're on.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hi, Kathy.
Can you hear me?
We can.
Hi. So I have some. I'm actually, of course, like everyone else, running errands, not at home where the stamps are. But I have some color Marvel Heroes stamps. Are they worth anything?
I didn't even hear that. Could you repeat?
Marvel Comics Heroes stamps.
Yes, in color.
And what denomination?
I'm
not at home. They're not on me. I was driving and heard your show.
Does it
say
forever?
They say things like Kapow.
Yes.
Yeah. They have heroes and things like that on
Neato.
Them. Well, they're large size.
You have two choices. If they have a number on them, that's exactly what they're worth. And if they say forever, they're worth, I guess, 65 cents now.
Is that what stamps are up to now?
Oh, no. They're 70.
We're just going up, aren't we?
I think they just
But they're about to go up, aren't they?
No, they just went up. If we had been on the show 3 weeks ago and you hadn't taken vacation, we could have saved everybody 5 cents because they just went up.
Wow.
Well, at the beginning of the month.
And if it's a forever stamp, you have actually just made an extra 5 cents.
Yeah.
But they are worth their postage value. The last stamp, I think
they're older. I don't think they're recent. I think they're like from the 70s or the 80s.
No, I think they're from the 10s or the they could be 15, 20 years old, but I don't think Marvel actually came out before that.
Well, I mean, the comic books only cost 12 cents, so the
Not
stamps...
Not anymore, dude. Have you bought a comic book these days?
No.
It's been a while.
Truth is, they'd have to be over 80 years... They'd probably have to be over 80 years old for them to actually have much of a premium. No, let's say
Thank you
70.
So much,
you got to get
the album.
Okay. Well, you never know. You know, some people have seen Bigfoot. Some people have seen the Loch Ness Monster.
I'm still looking for I want to see the Loch Ness Monster.
But you never know. Larry from Ulster County, there might be a sighting yet. I mean, that's all I'm saying. There's still a couple of minutes. And in the meantime, let's go to Albany. Edward, you're on.
Hello. Quick question, and I'll hang up.
Right.
Yep.
A while ago, I dug up a 3 cent coin from the 1880s U.S.
Yep.
And that made me wonder, what was the logic behind this 3 cent coin, and then more recently, although a while ago, the $2 bill. What was the logic behind the printing and the stamping of these?
Frequently, it was to buy stamps.
The logic of the 3 cent coin was to buy the three cent stamp.
Wow.
And it's called a trime.
A trime.
Yes.
And they
the $2 bill, I don't know.
They've been making silver. I mean, silver certificates, $2, they've been making since the mid-19th century. They go back almost, and you've got to remember, $2 was real money back then. It's become, because it's such a peculiar denomination and they look just like a George Washington, but in the end of the 19th century, the designs on the $2 bills were absolutely fabulous.
Interesting.
And they had George Washington and Martha Washington on them. And I mean,
What were they doing?
Looking at each other, or actually looking at you next to each other. But it's the only time the First Lady's ever been on a note. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that, but they're the printing of the early, of the late 20th century, late 19th century banknotes are fabulous. Why $2?
Yeah.
We It's
I mean, $7 would have made more sense, right?
Yes. And we will probably have that soon because I was coming up the turnpike the other day, hot dogs were $6.40. And
really? How many can you down these days?
How many can you afford?
At $6.40, I can't afford one. So.
Well, this has been one weird old show, fellas. How do people get in touch with you once again?
It is Coin and Stamp Guys, all spelled out, at Berk, BERK.com.
You know, the drive from Maryland has got to be, what, 8, 9, 10 hours, right?
At least.
It's worth it, though, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, to see your shining face.
Thank you so much. David Tripp, Bob Scott, thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Support comes from ArtSpark, Saratoga Springs, New York, specializing in digital marketing for artists and arts organizations. Website design, consultations, logos, and more, artspark.com. And Sharon Playhouse, Sharon, Connecticut, presenting You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, songs and vignettes based on the Charles Schulz comic strip, September 20th through 29th. Tickets at SharonPlayhouse.org. There is one for the books. We'll get the oven up to 451, and we'll toss it in. David Tripp, Bob Scott, great job, guys. Thanks for being here. Thanks to everybody who called in. Most of you, Larry in Ulster County, you're still calling in. The show's over, dude. We'll have to get you next time. These guys will be back. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Andrea Leon screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we welcome Chris Morris. He manages the Trails Program at the New York State Office of Parks, Recreation, and Historic Preservation. We'll see you, too.